Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Whoa, it's the CU.
Hi, Ian.
Howdy.
Welcome back to the CU Podcast for Tuesday,
August 27th, 2000.
Ian Ferguson is alongside Pat Country.
I am.
To run you through 92.7 minutes of hot retro gaming and movie news and pop culture stuff and
how close we are to that number.
And worshiping a monolithic entertainment company at an event. That's what we'll be talking about this week, along with Q&A, and also a Steam event was found, Ian, and also and someone found their heart. Some guy down the street, he found his true love. I talked to him the other day.
Oh, that's good.
No, I'm just making that up.
Okay.
I mean, maybe he did, but I don't know him personally. We also have a scumbag cell of the week, a Patreon poll topic. Ian.
Sir.
Did you miss the CU podcast?
I enjoyed my vacation. I didn't miss anything while I was on vacation. Doesn't mean I'm not happy to get back to certain things. And felt good to get back into a routine at work. It feels good to be back here talking.
Did you miss me, Ian?
I didn't. I mean,
I'm not gonna be hurt.
Maybe about a week and a half in, I was like, you know, I should probably catch up with Pat.
But... You missed not giving me calls back for like 2 days. You missed that.
It's not as much fun if you're not calling me to not call you.
You miss me not exactly.
If I'm just not talking.
It's
to
like
you.
The drug. You want the drug of seeing Pat's calls, and I know when you click off right away because it goes right to voicemail.
Yeah, I know. Think I don't know this? I'm not hiding the fact that I'm not talking to you right now.
See what I have to put up with? I'm trying to run a professional online entertainment company. You see what I have to put up with here? So what did you do, Ian? You went to Rochester.
We went to New York, and then for the Long Island Retro Convention, which I haven't even talked about at all. But I'll just
best
keep it
short
ever. By saying it was a fucking great convention. I loved it. It was really, really
the
well done.
Of Aviation Museum.
That museum was fantastic, yes. And the way they had it set up throughout the museum. This wasn't like in a convention center, like attached to it. It was in the museum. That was great. Then. I got to try White Castle for my first time.
How was it?
It was great.
Is it good?
Frank and I crushed $40 worth of it in the lobby.
What is that, like 20 sliders or something?
It was a lot. I mean, some of those sliders are like a dollar.
So you ate like 15 sliders each?
Well, we also had some sides. Okay. So it was maybe like 12 sliders each and then some sides.
That was before I got there?
When everyone went for
Friday,
sushi.
Though, Pat ordered birthday pizza for Ian.
It was good pizza, thank you. So then I went to Toronto. We took a 12-hour train ride, and it was freaking awesome.
It was
so good.
I need excuses to go on trains.
So good.
I wish the one to L.A. ran more than every 3-4 hours. I would go to L.A. more often, not to worry about not getting home.
Vani was a little, when we were booking it, she was a little about it. She had been on the train from Toronto to Buffalo and vice versa before, and she liked it, but that's a shorter ride. It's about an hour.
Sure.
About an hour to the border, about an hour at customs, and then about an hour and a half to Toronto. But this was, like I said, 12 and a half hours, but we sprung the extra $25 per seat for business class. You get a little bit of extra room, you get free beverages, you get leg rests that fold up out of your chair.
Okay.
And you're right by the dining car, so not only is it comfortable and very spacious and easy to like lay back and try to fall asleep, it's prettier outside the windows than a plane, and the dining room was open. Basically, it's just a car full of booths with tables, so we were able to go sit in there, stretch out, play cards, all that sort of thing. It was awesome.
Any murders happened on the train?
No murders, no mysteries needed to be solved. No.
You know, if that was actually like a thing, if you had like a 1% chance of getting killed, but you can also solve a crime, I would go on trains more often.
Yeah,
that was like a perk.
I think that would be a lot of fun.
That'd be great. I might get killed, but probably won't. Potentially.
Toronto was great. We hung out with our friend Kelly two days
Kelly.
There, and we went to a couple of really
Hi,
cool
Kelly.
Places. Yes, you do. we went to a place called Stormcrow Manor that is like six different rooms. It's a bar and restaurant, but they have like a cyberpunk room with an actual hologram in the middle and all the like lights. It looks like it's right out of Blade Runner.
Hologram of what?
Like a lady.
A lady talking?
Yeah.
Dancing?
And then they had a full recreation of the bar from The Shining.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which was really awesome. They just had a lot of stuff. There was a big, the Beholder from Dungeons & Dragons was mounted on the wall like it was a head trophy.
I don't know what that is.
I can't believe you don't. Look it up. You'll know what it is.
Okay.
It bothers me that you don't know what a Beholder is.
I never played Dungeons & Dragons.
You don't have to play Dungeons & Dragons to know what a Beholder is.
Okay.
It's
a monster with it's a floating orb of flesh.
With lots of
eyes. Yeah, I should know what that is. Yes, okay, go
probably
on.
Probably should. Yeah. But anyways, that place was awesome. We had a lot of fun. I did a lot of eating. I found a place that serves patties one block over from where we were staying. Patties are a Jamaican and larger West Indian sort of cuisine. It's spicy meat. At its basis level, it is spicy meat and sauce wrapped in a crispy shell that is colored with turmeric. So there's turmeric flavoring in it. It looks like an empanada.
Turmeric's like reddish?
Yellowish.
Yellowish, okay.
Yeah. So it looks like an empanada. They're hard to find out here. They're absolutely delicious. I used to eat them all the time when I lived in Buffalo.
It's like a meat tostada?
It's like not a tostada because it's folded over.
It's folded over.
Tostada is open.
Okay, well, they call them, I guess, flying saucers when there's two here.
No, it's nothing like that. Nothing like a flying saucer.
You don't want intermittent fasting eating. We're talking about food.
Yeah, like that's fine. but they had them, and they had them with cocoa bread. And cocoa bread is this dense, doughy, delicious bread that is just slightly sweet because it's made with a little bit of cocoa, coconut milk.
I'm feeling dense and doughy right now.
And you make a sandwich out of it. So you're basically double carbing that meat.
Oh, of course.
And then pounding it down.
It's not good to have mostly protein. You got to add the carbs on carbs.
In Buffalo, I ate a lot of pizza.
Food pyramid's a conspiracy. Go on.
I ate a lot of pizza in Buffalo, wings, got my Louis Texas Red Hots.
What's that?
It's a hot dog that has nothing to do with Texas. It has a spicy meat sauce on top of it, but not a chili. It's nothing like chili, really, when you have it.
But it's a meat sauce.
It's a very fine
like
meat
Italian
sauce.
Italian meat sauce?
No. You'd have to look it up. It's weird.
It's like a Hormel, like the skimming a Hormel can of chili?
It's a lot of skims of things and spices.
Or garbage I left over in the pot.
and then with mustard and onions. It's delicious.
I like a good hot dog. It's just hard to find a good hot dog.
And then lastly, just blowing through all of these 2 weeks, I hung out with my niece and my nephew a lot.
That's good.
A lot of fun. Reminded me that I definitely don't want kids ever, but kids can be a lot of fun. We took my niece and nephew to the park. We took my niece to the Strong Museum. And holy shit,
I
have to talk about that. So it was fun hanging out with them. The Strong Museum was...
really in shape from what I hear.
Awesome. It's what's that?
It's really in shape.
Yeah, that's good.
Strong calves.
Thanks to Andrew Borman there, who is the head of, I believe it's digital preservation, for showing Bonnie and myself around. Their archives are absolutely fucking insane. I mean, when I was talking to our friend Frank, and
all the games for all the systems you can go look at in the sealed baggies or whatever.
In a way. Yeah. Not everything archives. Is out like that.
But it's archived.
It's archives. They have all sorts of crazy stuff back there. They have... They have invisible monsters, which it's shaking my head. It's a proto. They have like literal prototype cabinets that only one or two of
arcade
in the world
cabinets.
Exist. They have
like Primal Rage 2.
No, they don't have a Primal Rage.
But like that,
yes,
there's only a few of them.
They had some of the Sega old electromechanical games before arcade games became popular. So they had the big gunman fight. I don't know if you've ever seen that one.
Did that come out here?
It's toys. I believe it was here as well.
Gunman fight?
I think it's just called Gunman.
Gunman.
Or Gunfighter Sega. Sega Gunfighter.
Sega or pinball.
Okay. No, it's not pinball.
Oh, it's just electromechanical.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like that museum in San Francisco has all those old ones.
But this one's particularly neat. You can like knock the tops off of like cacti and stuff like
1983,
that.
1983 Gunslinger. That's what you mean. Is that it?
Let me see. I don't think so. 83 sounds way too early. 1983.
It's like a fucking robot.
Yeah, no, that's not it.
Okay, that's something else that's cool.
Sega.
There's a robot you fight, Gunslinger. Electro Techniques. God, I love that stuff.
Yeah, it's Sega Gunfight.
I love this sort of stuff. I'm looking at something totally different that I've never seen before. I'm surprised it's 83 because I never saw it.
But they had old wood rail pinball machines in the back. I mean, nice. This is massive. You can't.
Most of these are donations, obviously, right?
Yes. It's really hard to kind of comprehend how much work they are doing behind the scenes. And I really implore everyone, I mean, if you're in that area, go. The ticket is like $16. And the amount of stuff there is wild. And if, I don't want to say everyone, but they seem to be very, very easygoing about, if you do YouTube, if you have any sort of research you want to do. Generally filming, you can't really film back there. You can take like close-up photos and stuff. But if you have any interest in that stuff, they seem pretty willing to work with people to find a time to get you back there to look at all that stuff.
Gotcha. They want you to film? Okay. Hey, DK. What's going on, buddy? Sorry.
Yeah. So, anyways, that's...
And most importantly, you got your garbage plate.
I did. So Bill Gray's is a place in... I was not aware that was the place in the... foyer, courtyard, entrance area. I can't remember what the hell you would call it. I don't know the word. But Bill Gray's is a popular one in Rochester. Dogtown is probably the real big popular one. Nick Tahoe's was the originator, but it doesn't seem like people go to Nick Tahoe's that much anymore. Poor Nick. Andrew actually told me, he's like, the ones in the lobby are very good. The sauce is spicy. And I've never really had a spice, like, sometimes they have a little kick, but the hot sauce is not generally hot. It's just called a hot sauce. Oh, this one had a real nice...
Ian, I love
had
you.
Had a real nice bit of pepper to it.
Ian, I love you.
Uh-huh.
I want to hear about the garbage plate. I don't need a TED Talk about the garbage plate.
Okay, I'll remind you of that next time you go on for 20 minutes about your plumber.
It was just a passing thing.
Okay.
I only talked for 20 minutes of the podcast about my plumber. I was going to bring up my plumbing experience, but that's okay.
Anyways, I'll keep that in mind next time you go off. So, yeah, that was my trip.
I was just going to say, I just wanted the one-minute story version of the garbage plate.
I want many one-minute versions of stories from you, too.
What were the ingredients of the garbage plate?
I'm good. Let's go.
Wow. I insulted Ian.
We've got topics.
Well, no, we do have topics, Ian. But I was going to talk about what's been going on in my world a little bit.
Hit me.
All right, Ian. I'll keep it under a minute. So the SNES book is being printed. It's at ultimatesnes.com. Ian's got to look at the
the digital. Did the you digital send me version. That?
No, I didn't send it to you yet. There. And it's been, my life has been, while Ian's been gone having fun on train rides and eating garbage plates and hot dogs and Strong Museum, my life has been a logistical nightmare in terms of just getting my house in order and refinancing and plumbing issues and also warehousing stuff. With the NES book and the Super Nintendo book, you know about that. But the Super Nintendo book, the digital version's out, and then hopefully, in 2 months, it's in people's hands. Most of the pre-orders and backers at that point. But Ian, we got a T-shirt.
We do,
my man.
If you've never been to the shows, you may not have seen this available.
Now it's on Teespring. The my man, Super Friends. See you podcast shirt. Go to teespring.com/my-man-cu-podcast. Not sure why it's not all one word as Ian's alarm goes off here. That was the alarm to end your garbage plate story. I'm teasing you, Ian. Don't be pissed at me. This is our reunion show. So this t-shirt will be available for 30 days in multiple colors, but there's not just t-shirts, Ian.
Multiple colors.
There's not just t-shirts. You can get the classic tee. There's a die-cut sticker you can get.
You can get a Whoop It Up towel.
You can get a Whoop It Up towel. You can get the classic pullover hoodie. You get the mug is available. The women's classic tee.
Who doesn't need more mugs?
You can get also the women's flowy tank top. It's flowy tank top. Or the women's fitted tank top. So I might
the one that's a little flittery at the bottom.
So I'll do this. How about this? If we sell 200 shirts, I will wear the men's tank top on an episode. If we sell 500 shirts, I will wear the women's flowy tank top for one CU podcast. That's my word. 500 t-shirts sold, I will do the flowy tank top.
I'll do the flowy for 150 and a couple burritos.
Okay. I'm not sure I can bind that. agreement because people will be satisfied with that. And Ian goes against our self-interest all the time on the CU podcast. But that's okay.
I want the food.
You want the food? You can't make side deals. So there it is, the My Man shirt. It's teespring.com/my-man-cu podcast there. So, Ian, we had the D23, right?
Yes.
That happened. So the D23, I think they've done three or four of these. It's Disney's Entertainment Expo. And I got to admit, I have no problem with these conventions, type of conventions happening. But the same thing with like the BlizzCon, like you brought up, where it's just weird to me where you're not celebrating a particular franchise or a particular game. You're celebrating a conglomerate, huge, monolithic media company.
Yes.
That to me is just strange and postmodern and weird and...
Yeah, I went into that heavily when we were talking about the Blizzard stuff, about how it's very weird to go and celebrate one company and only the things under their arch, but then also get... It's a really weird relationship, and it creates some very toxic shit between fans and people as well. Either you go and you love it, or you're going to get upset, but it's enclosed. There's no other opinions there. You're just looking at their stuff.
Well, you're
paying for this, and you know you're going
to
be upset by something.
You're paying to go to a convention in order to see what's coming next to buy or ingest more. But not just like going to like a Star Wars convention or Star Trek convention or whatever. It's for whatever.
D23 has been 10 years, by the way.
It's been 10 years?
Yes.
They do them every year?
They do them every year. They did it March 2000. They started in March 2009.
Okay, I don't remember the last one. Last year if they did one.
Biennial.
Anyway, it's every 2 years.
Yes.
So I am right. They've done like four or five of them. Okay. So it's weird, though, because then you have to ingest things you may not care about during these presentations, where it's like, oh, I want to hear about that, but I don't care about this, or there's other things going on. But again, it's just one media company. And now Disney owns like over half the movie library that's ever existed at this point. So it's at least for the popular franchises. So it's just weird to me. But okay, if you enjoy it, that's fine. That's perfectly fine. I just think it's a little strange.
Yes.
To want to go there. In terms of the Marvel announcements, Ian, there was some good stuff that was announced, some stuff I don't care about, but also some good stuff. So I'm just going to go down this article here. So this is most of this stuff is announced for the upcoming Disney Plus, which also now has they announced this thing that everyone's going to get, where you get Disney Plus, you get Hulu, and you get ESPN Plus for like, it's like $12 a month for all three or something like that, whatever it costs.
Really got you by the balls there.
There's like no reason not to get it. It's like you don't want to lose money by not spending $3 more or whatever and buying it at all. Like that's basically what they've done.
It's practically stealing.
And honestly, with ESPN Plus, that's I think more they're trending towards to get you to watch premium like sports content and live content and UFC stuff. And
if it gives me access to basketball, I don't give a shit. That's all I want.
And then Hulu itself has live sports. I see all the commercials, so the marketing's working. And Hulu has, obviously, TV shows that you might have missed the week before, besides Golden Girls and stuff like that. So it's a pretty robust package. And Netflix may not be in trouble right now, but trending towards that 5-10 years from now, they could be in deep doo-doo because of something as powerful as Disney getting into the streaming. But anyway, so a lot of the stuff they announced to get you on board, these exclusive stuff. So Falcon and Winter Soldier, I think, is going to be awesome. They announced U.S. Patriot's going to be on there, mm-hmm. who was Captain America at some point in the late 80s or late 90s. He's a nutcase. But they're working that in, and they're bringing back the villain from Civil War. Baron Zemo is going to be back.
Nice.
So that's like really exciting because that's one of my favorite villains.
Yeah, he's great.
And Baron Zemo is a pretty cool villain. And they're bringing back Sharon Carter, who we haven't seen in years, that they kind of forgot about Sharon.
Oh, really?
Sharon Carter.
I didn't know that.
They should, though, because if I was her, I'd be kind of like, where am I? I'm not in the Infinity War or anything. It's kind of forgot about me. WandaVision, they're pushing it as like a half sitcom, half like adventure thing. I'm not sure if that's going to be like in her mind that she's living in a sitcom. Like she's having like... Scarlet Witch is having dreams of things. Either way, it's going to be interesting there. And then, of course, that means that Vision's back somehow. But then maybe she's not. Oh, it's entirely in Wanda's head. That's the theory. As she comes to terms. No, it's going to be all in her head. I think they're going to bring back Vision somehow.
People like
Vision.
Yeah, it's possible.
The What If cartoon story, we know about that, obviously. It's going to be, you know, if you ever read What If in the comics, it's like, you know, what if Dark Phoenix didn't die? You know, what if the Hulk died from the gamma bomb, you know, and didn't turn into Hulk David Banner, you know, Bruce Banner, I should say, you know, things like that. And then it usually ends up a hell of a lot worse. Like, what if Daredevil wasn't blinded but had everything else, and somehow it's worse? You know, it's like the worst case scenarios of everything, but it's fun. It's fun to get into that. The Moon Knight series, Ian. You're a Moon Knight guy. I don't know much about Moon Knight.
I'm super excited for the Moon Knight series, and I hope Moon Knight seems to be gaining a little bit of traction year after year. But Moon Knight is Mark Spector, a guy who got basically his origins. He was like beat up and left for dead by the Bushman or the Bushmaster.
Bushmaster.
By Bushmaster.
Okay.
And he essentially begins communicating with this spirit, Khonshu, who kind of becomes a voice in his head.
Okay.
To break it down very simply, he is, it doesn't necessarily do him justice, but he is essentially a Batman that suffers from identity disorder, dissociative identity disorder.
Okay.
Sometimes schizophrenia, but he's mentally ill, and he communicates with this god Khonshu. He's a billionaire. So he makes a lot of money.
Like Bruce Wayne, but even nuttier.
Right, exactly. But it's a lot of fun, and his comics are generally out there. He has had a few good recent series that I would suggest people check into. One's a 6-issue, but the other good one was, I believe, a 12-issue. It's been a while since I read it, but it was essentially what led into Age of Ultron, the comic event.
Okay.
That was how Ultron came up. That's basically how Ultron got back out there.
I remember him getting a teeny popular in the early 90s for a bit with like him and Ghost Rider, but it didn't catch on, I think, at the time. It was like, oh, people were interested in, that was the first time, I was like, oh, Moon Knight's a thing, but I don't think it ever got off the ground from there. You know, he was still like a C-lister, if you can call him that.
But, I mean, he still kind of is, but I like him, and his costume is great.
The white costume.
His costume looks awesome. So
what's the meme about the Dracula owing him money? I keep seeing. Where's that from?
Well, he has dealt with Dracula, but I don't.
He's fought Dracula in the comics.
Well, I believe he has. And Dracula pops up in really good places. One of my favorite short miniseries is Captain Britain and MI-13, and it ends with them fighting Dracula on the moon. It's fantastic.
Okay, I'm reading the background story to Moon Knight, and it sounds like just a Batman parody. That sounds like how it was created.
Yeah, but I mean, I can see that being the
former
case.
Marine turned mercenary Mark Spector hops around the globe, going from job to job until he ends up in Egypt on assignment, and then he comes upon an archaeological dig, and through a series of mishaps, is left for dead, and then he hits his power. Wow. Okay. And then I'm really excited, Ian, about She-Hulk.
Yeah.
She-Hulk is a fantastic property that they couldn't... this is why I'm glad they got to terms, because I think if Universal still owned this, they couldn't, I guess, do a movie, but they can do a series. So this is kind of surprising to me, a She-Hulk series. And She-Hulk is good because it can be lighthearted, it can be procedural, if you do the lawyer stuff, and it's a fun character. She's hot, Jen, so... Cousin of Bruce Banner. I wonder if they're going to keep the same sort of origin there or go off in some direction there. But She-Hulk was kind of surprising.
Yeah, that's not one I would have thought of. But, I mean, a lot of the original ones weren't ones that I would have thought of. I would have never guessed Luke Cage. I would have never guessed... Iron Fist.
Really? Yeah. I would have thought those would be perfect sort of second, third tier guys to get it. But She-Hulk will be interesting just because, she can still... smash things around, but obviously she's not as powerful as original Hulk, but I like the character a lot because there was a run when she was part of Fantastic Four in the 80s. A lot of people may not know that. I think the Thing went missing on other planets. There was a time in the 80s where the Thing got really popular and had like mini series and was off on his own adventures for a while. So She-Hulk came in and filled in the spot, and it was interesting because it was a different dynamic. I think it was probably for like a year or so, maybe like 83, something like that. When She-Hulk got popular. I'm interested in seeing how that works out. Okay, they're keeping the story the same. Blood transfusion from Bruce, and then Jennifer gets her powers. Okay. All right, there you go. That'll be fine. And then Ms. Marvel. I know nothing about this incarnation of Ms. Marvel. No, absolutely nothing, so I can't comment on this. Yeah, I don't know if you do. Kamala Khan, created in 2015, so it's a new character, newer character. New Jersey High School. Okay, I'm in if it's New Jersey. I'm in. There you go. And that's coming out. And then the Loki series we knew about. That'll be obviously fun. The Black Widow movie. That's going to be cool. I think that's going to be cool. It's gonna be interesting because that'll be obviously the only probably Black Widow movie we're going to get. But that's going to be cool there. And then the Eternals, I know nothing about. And everyone I talk to is like, yeah, I'll watch it. But I probably will watch just because it's a Marvel movie.
I'm starting to look forward to it more that I start seeing some of the casting decisions, like Kit Harington is going to be in there.
Okay.
And as much as I'm losing interest fast as we approach the end of Game of Thrones, Vani and I, we're almost done watching it. I have continued to enjoy him as a character, I mean, as an actor. So I'd watch that.
I've never watched Game of Thrones, but if he's good, people are like, oh, he's going to be Wolverine. I'm like, really? You really think so? They're going to announce Wolverine like that?
I don't think he would have made a... He could have, but nah.
Yeah. Black Panther 2 is coming out 2022. The movie was last year. It's 4 years in between sequels. I hate when they do that. But okay, that's going to be 2022. Oh, we didn't mention about the TV show. They mentioned those characters we worked in the movies for the first time.
Oh, okay. That. Excellent.
So like Moon Knight can show up in a movie or some of these other characters. That's great. That's fantastic to do that. Especially since we're not sure we're going to have a Hulk again. So having a She-Hulk, I mean, it's not Hulk, but it's Hulk-ish. It's someone green. Anyway, so... let's see. According to Black Panther 2, according to this article, Craven the Hunter can't be in this now with the Sony thing happening. We'll get into. I hope it's going to be Namor, Submariner, show up as a villain. They hinted at that in Endgame. That would be awesome. That would be especially with climate change stuff going on, and it's more prevalent than ever. That
I think Namor should definitely.
He's going to come out swinging, and Namor's the best. He's the best. He's like underutilized for some reason. He's not used as much as he should be. OG Marvel guy. Him and the cyborg Human Torch. Okay. So then real quick about the Sony Spider-Man news is freaking awful. I hope they're going to come to agreement. It's still early enough that they can come to some sort of agreement or some sort of compromise here to make it work. Because both parties benefit from having Spider-Man.
Yeah, I think both parties benefit, and I think they're both being very stubborn. I really don't care about the larger workings of Money Men, but it's dumb. I mean, it's not going to...
Money Men.
If Sony had never done it, then that would be one thing. But now that it's in the MCU, to go back is going to piss off two sets of fans. Just fans in general.
You will have people that will say, I don't want to see this by default, whether or not it's a good movie. And now they set up so much through four movies or five movies, they've set up this Spider-Man to pull him back and then have him just fight Venom and Carnage. I'm not interested. I'm just not.
Yeah, in my
I'm not interested in the dark Sony Venomverse that they're trying to do. I'm not interested in the Morbius movie that I hope bombs. See, this is what's going to happen. You're hoping that if they don't bomb, these movies are going to do poorly. Like, no one's clamoring for a Morbius movie. I'm sorry. And no one's going to want to see some of these standalone movies. Like if they do like a Silver Sable movie, no one's going to see it. So, I mean, like, it's going to take a few of these to fail. The problem was Venom did well. Did better than expected. And so now they think they can do whatever they want because of that.
I wonder, the Venom thing, everyone knew it was... It got out that it was bad, and then it became one of those it's so bad it's
to see
good
it.
Thing yeah. movies. So people went out of curiosity. That's not something that regularly strikes twice.
Sure. And maybe the sequel is good, but maybe the interest will be automatically declined because of that. Tom Holland's heartbroken. He's like depressed because of this. I would be too. Because if you go from having fun being in these Avengers movies and now you can't do that anymore, this is the most bizarre thing that's happened. And the whole deal is bizarre. But for them to pull this back, they gotta come on, settle like 20%. Marvel gets like 20% of the movie take. I think that's fair. They put up 20% of the money. You're still making bank because I don't think it made over $1 billion this last one, and Marvel and Disney produced it.
Right.
The next one's not going to make $1 billion if it's not connected.
One of the weird arguments that I've seen is that, well, the one that won an Oscar wasn't the Marvel movie. And it's like, but the Marvel movie is the one that brought in all the, you know, over a bill.
Sony was like hands off on that, on the animated one. And it didn't make that much money, unfortunately. So, like, you can't make that argument. Commercially, it wasn't that big of a success. And they probably were hands off. Like, when Sony's hands off, it's like George Lucas. When they're hands off, it's a better product when everyone else is doing it.
I don't think that, once again, I don't think that that's going to be a thing that hits twice.
Remember how bad Amazing Spider-Man 2 was. Just remember that, everyone, how horrible Amazing Spider-Man 2 was. And they were trying to do an Aunt May movie, infamously, and they were trying to do these Sinister Six movies. And that's what happens when Sony has full control. They run roughshod. Yeah, they bought the rights to it, but Jesus Christ, I wish it wasn't a Lifetime thing. Which was like, oh, we'll give you the rights for 25 years, 20 years, because now we're dealing with this.
They bought Lifetime rights?
As long as they make a movie every 3 years, they have Spider-Man forever and ever and ever. That's why there's been a Spider-Man movie every 3 years.
Gotcha.
There has to be, or the rights revert back. All right, and then real quick on Star Wars stuff, I don't care about Episode 9. I'm going to watch it because I think it's going to be batshit crazy, because I think J.J. Abrams is going to try to like reverse course on Last Jedi stuff and just do whatever the hell he wants. He basically said that. He basically said, I'm going to do whatever the hell I want on this last movie. But screw that. Mandalorians looks amazing.
The Mandalorian looks really good.
The Mandalorian. Part of the Mandalorians.
I don't get very excited for Star Wars stuff. Doesn't mean I don't like it. Because I enjoy about all of it. Like, The Last Jedi, whatever. It was a fucking movie. It was fine by me because I don't have this... It couldn't be better than that, and it couldn't be worse than that, as long as it was entertaining to watch, which it was, because I just don't have that much invested into it. I just can't get that worked up. But at the same point in time, this sort of, like, the Episode 9, it's like, okay, it's a Stars movie, I'm going to go see it. But I do like the world. I've grown tired ever since the first trilogy. I mean... This is where I admit there are Star Wars fans, and then there are Star Wars fans that like the first trilogy who keep insisting they're Star Wars fans and don't like anything else. I think the world is very unique. So The Mandalorian is, you know, something completely to the side of what we've already seen.
Yeah.
It's a bounty hunter show simply set in a universe that I think is well crafted. So I'm excited to see that.
The universe of Star Wars is more interesting to me than most of the characters in Star Wars. Just this grimy, futuristic world where you have bad actors. It's not like I idealize like Star Trek. It's the exact opposite. It's just like, you know, it's like almost like post-apocalyptic almost in some of these worlds. And obviously the weapons are cool. I'm more into it for the... I love the spaceships and the dogfighting. That to me is why Star Wars... The first movie Star Wars was popular. Right? This conversation on Twitter. People are like, you can't have Star Wars without Jedi and lightsabers. Oh, hell yes, you can.
Yeah, you can.
Because that first Star Wars movie, there was barely any Jedi crap in it. And they were referencing it. It's interesting how much they switched up the Jedi stuff between the original... In the original trilogy, it was treated like, yeah, these are just weirdos. Ancient religion, like, you guys are just out of your mind. This is something that happened long ago. Who cares? And then by the prequels, it was like there was a billion of them, and it was like there was like some, you know, the population of Jedi was too big, and it became like watered down a lot, and now I'm sick of it. But the popular Star Wars stuff to me in the 90s, there was a lot of that crap that didn't rely upon Jedis. Shadows of the Empire.
A lot of the novels.
The video books. Games, like the first Dark Forces and TIE Fighter and X-Wing. That had nothing to do with Jedis, and it was great. And so this is why, and people like Pat don't say that because they're going to have like Jedi show up. There might eventually, they might have one or two, but it's not going to be like, you know, like watching like the Clone Wars or those cartoons where it's all Jedi main characters and stuff. I have no interest in that. They're not interesting characters. I like Gina Carano in this. Carl Weathers in this. Werner Herzog is in this. The cast is insane in this. The effects look great.
I when I saw Carl Weathers,
that's it. Apollo's in this. We're done.
Like, I'm good.
We're done. Like we're done. And then obviously, the cinematography is fantastic, in this. And then it's not IG-88. It's IG-11, but it's still. Here's the thing: that bounty hunter scene in Empire Strikes Back with IG-88, Dengar, Forlom, Bosk, Zuckuss. And Boba Fett, yes, I know the names, was great because it gave you a hint of what else was in the universe. And the fact that they were even like, the Empire didn't like the bounty hunters. I'm like, that's cool. That's why these guys are great. And now we're getting stories about them. Bosk has to show up as a villain at some point. Bosk is cool. That big lizard guy is cool. He's got to show up as a villain. Bounty hunter. What's that?
I do like Bosk.
Everyone likes Bosk. Everyone knows Bosk is in. You don't even know who Dengar is, but you know who Bosk is. Or Zuckuss there. Anyway, so that's cool. All right, and that's our D23 roundup. So, Ian, did you see my topic on the Retro Game Gold Rush?
Yes, I listened.
It was a TED Talk. I know you didn't like it. It was a TED Talk.
It was 45 minutes long.
But it had to be.
And I don't know that it did. I really don't know that it did. At 22 minutes, you're like, all right, I'm gonna truncate it here.
I did.
And then you went on for another 22 minutes.
All right, Ian, get your revenge on Pat. Punch me, Ian.
No.
I like it.
But it's, between the article and what you had to say, it was a good two sides of a coin. I did make a couple of notes.
Two sides of a coin or two different, like two?
Two sides of a coin. Two different sides of a coin.
Oh, two different sides.
Two sides of a coin.
Sometimes you say it's two sides of a coin when it's the same side, kind of. Or,
do you? No. I don't think you do.
What's that expression? I'm not good with expressions sometimes.
Two sides of the same coin.
Two sides of the same coin.
Two sides of the coin.
The expression is two sides of the same coin, meaning it's two ways of saying the same thing. This was two different sides of a coin. Anyway, you can go on. Are you looking it up?
No, I'm pulling up my notes.
Oh, you have notes on your phone? Why don't you put it on the Google Drive?
Because I don't know. I just have a few notes here. And
okay.
Then you can coax me with other stuff.
Okay, but... well, the follow-up was that Danielle wanted to, I guess, debate me or have a discussion. She contacted me on Facebook. She said that my take was one-sided when I was providing the counterpoint to what I saw was a one-sided mostly article. So I thought that was interesting. So I created the other side to the article.
I do see that as a silly thing to say. but honestly, the problem is neither side is going to agree with the other side.
Of course not.
So it's not exactly...
It's diametrically opposed.
It's not exactly a counterpoint on either side as it is just statements. This is what we have. There's nothing to really gain,
they're predictions.
Back and forth. Sure.
Except that, here's the only difference is I'm not biased in my viewpoint. I don't have stake in the game in terms of giving my viewpoint of where the market's going.
So
I don't have investment in it.
A couple of things. I agree that they that the people, I thought it was strange, the whole love of the game thing, the people talking about how they're getting into it because they have love for these games.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that especially in the world of collecting. I see this as sort of a manufactured thing, and I think a lot of people do. And it's happened before. You build up the hype. It was the same thing with the comics in the 90s.
And Magic cards.
And everything. I mean, Pokemon cards. You know, I mean, anyone who comes out and is like, oh, I have this thing, it must be worth a lot, has somehow fallen victim to this sort of inflated sense, this inflated idea of worth and value.
Sure. The value.
But I don't... With video game collecting having been around for as long as it has now, and with the fact that I would say, in general, loose NES collecting is on the downward slope, it's hard for me to believe that a lot of these people who are jumping into it are suddenly jumping in because they have love for the game. Did you not have love for these games 3 years ago when it was popular?
It doesn't fit the demographics, what they're saying. A lot of these people that have this money, they're not in their 30s, they're in their 40s or 50s. I've met a couple of these folks, and it's like, you weren't in the demographics when the NES was popular. You probably didn't have it as a kid, so it's already false.
Right.
Not saying everyone, but I'm saying from some of the people I know, it's like they're a little bit too old to have been NES fans to begin with, or Super Nintendo.
That said, I do disagree with you a little bit on the point of if they were just in it for the love of the game, they would be fine with a complete unopened copy. I can't say what collectors are going to be into. I like having a sealed something or another every once in a while.
I just think it's convenient that now that this graded sealed game's available, now this is what I have to own.
Sure, I get that, but I wouldn't call someone not a collector because they went with a sealed copy over a complete copy and they have a loose copy. I can't say what people like.
These people aren't buying loose copies.
No, I know they're not. I'm just saying I wouldn't use that as a determining factor. Then let's see, what else do I have here? The difference in between what sellers are slabbed and collectors want. I've dealt with this at the store. So the whole idea, you guys were using the Left Brothers Super Mario 3
yes.
variant thing. It doesn't matter if it's rare. If people aren't looking for it, people aren't looking for it, and people don't care. There are plenty of rare comics that, probably had 15 made. No one is looking for them. No one wants them. It doesn't matter. It's still just dog trash. It doesn't matter. So I used to deal with that a lot in the store when people would trade in, and they'd be like, "Oh well, it's this variant, which is technically one of the Gunsmoke ones." I'm like, "I'm not. we don't pay more or less for these.
Oh, it was a Gunsmoke label variant?
Yeah. Or okay. I actually had someone try to sell me a Super Mario 3 once, and we had a couple of times, and we had, you know, anywhere between 15 and 20 in the back room.
Half for me, probably.
And they were like, you know, this is the more rare one, though.
And you're like, okay. I can't sell it for more, though.
And that's what I explained. They're like, but they literally said, but less exist.
So?
And I feel like that's like kind of the argument here. Just because less exist does not mean it's something that can easily be capitalized on. If no one cares, no one cares. And I tell people about it all the time. Like, if we have one of them, I'm like, look, this is cool. And they're like, yeah, I'll take the regular one. And people just don't give a shit. Or they're like, oh, I'll take either one. You have to manufacture the demand for that. And people have been trying to do that in the, you know, loose cart, complete, whatever, the normal collecting scene, I guess, well, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. They've been trying to do that for years, and it's not working in that segment of it. So now they've really got to try to build that up for, you know, this sealed box collecting. Sure. And it's
they have to find these variants. They have to find these first prints wherever they can because there's not enough of them.
Right. Collecting stops. It's not natural to suddenly force all of the these things into collecting. And I have really, whatever, I have no beef with these people who are doing this. And my reason why is NES is on the downturn. It's not gonna shoot up prices, I think, for anyone who wants to buy these games socially to play them. I don't think it's really going to hurt them. What I do think it's going to do is create a very insular market that is going to crash just like comics did.
Well, and that's why, again, I hope you didn't skim past that part, or that's where I got, I guess, the most fiery, because it was a big crap on video game dealers and sellers.
That's what I was referencing, was that.
Not knowing what sellers have to know to be successful, but then not knowing the buyer's market of what game players and collectors care about. And that, to me, was just so arrogant for someone coming into the hobby to say that you guys should know better in order to manufacture this scarcity that people care about. If you try to push to the people coming to your store, if you had both Super Mario Brothers next to each other, and there's still a good amount of the first print there, they're not like 1%.
No, I see. I mean, in my stacks, I usually have one somewhere.
They're
in
like,
there.
If you want to say 10 to 20%, even. You know, the first print was probably still millions or a million. So you have to sell products. So if you put both on the shelf and the regular one was $15, if you try to sell that first print run for 60 or 70, no one would care that came in, probably. Most people was like, I just want the $15
one. No one would care. And that's the thing. Yeah. You can tell us that we should be looking for that stuff, but
that's not how you're making money.
But we have. We've been in this market for years, decades, and it's just some of that stuff to the regular collectors never mattered. Now, this is a new thing. Obviously, they can manufacture if they want, but I look at it and I shake my head, and it's, you're going to have to preach that to an entirely new audience, because no one who's already collecting video games is suddenly going to go, oh, you're right, I should give a shit about that. They're not going to.
And I think the other thing that I spoke about a lot, I forgot to bring this up. Comic books, by and large, were printed for like 1 month. Sometimes for a couple of months, or they were quarterly back in like the 30s, early 40s. Video games were produced for years. Super Mario Brothers, the black box one, was probably made for like 7 years. They probably made it up to like 92. That's why there's so many printings. So when you have a collector like me, to me, the material difference isn't that big that I got to go for the first print run of every single thing. Like my Clue Land's probably a Rev A. It's not the very first one. It's probably the one that came out, you know, late 86 versus like early 86, or, you know what I mean? So it doesn't matter to most of us. To us, we don't have a cutoff. To us, it's not a reprint. It's just a continuation of the line, if that makes sense. That's how most of us look at these video games. And that's where I see the other difference being as well.
What else was I going to say? Oh, I mean, it's to the point, though, where it's hard for me to even talk about this or want to, because just because video games are the central item here, it's two completely different worlds. The rules that they've gone on are, you know, the things that they're building up. It's like if someone took Chutes and Ladders and instead of like, okay, we play it this way, and we're going to sort of adapt these rules for a new audience of players. Uh-huh. They just take the same game and throw the rules out and rewrite them completely. It's not, it's at some point, I can't equate the two or even compare the two, because it's just because it's using video games, it's not the same in any way, shape, or form. I don't think the sealed collecting, like I said, will ever affect
no
the regular collecting. It's, but, it's its own little bubble. And I would be surprised, and I could be wrong, but like on Nintendo Age even, there's very few people who like kind of bleed that line.
There's very few that are like really into both.
Yeah, there's very, very few that are really into both. And I don't know. It doesn't even seem like they're necessarily part of this new style of video game collecting, with the exception of a few.
Well, they're priced out, and it's a 1% game hobby. I mean, that's what it is. It's not for me or you. Like I said, I'll be interested to see what happens at Portland. This will be the first time these collectors, you want to call them that, speculators, investors, are going to be at Portland this year, probably, because they were at too many games. But like I said, at Long Island, it was funny. The WADA guy was right next to us. He told me that he literally sold one game.
Yeah,
that weekend.
Well,
that's just what the market is. There's not that many people.
It's not video game collecting. It's collecting as a hobby has found video games to collect, and fine.
You're collecting wealth containers. I think that's what my favorite. They're wealth containers.
Sure.
The same thing that like high graded, you know, comics became. Like, they're wealth containers. It's like buying art at that point. All right, we moving on?
Yeah.
All right, Ian. Speaking of overpriced, trashy games that collectors like. We had a Steam Events discovery. This is like the new age of gaming Aquarius this year, finding NWC cards willy-nilly and finding Steam Events. This comes from our favorite website, Nintendo Age. This was a Canadian find. The user's name is Why Not Zoidberg, which is a funny...
It's a good name.
With a nice pixel. So they bought a $100 lot of Nintendo games. Sounds like it was from like an app, like I guess like Let It Go, one of those sort of things. And he went over and he bought a lot of Nintendo games and realized as he was going that, you know, Steam Events was part of it, and got this in a lot for $100. This is one of those finds that you dream about happening, that you hear about. It happened with that guy that Nintendo Age hated a few years ago that found it at a yard sale. He did the video and they went after him thinking it was fake, it was made up. No, he found it at a yard sale. It can happen.
Yeah, still. And it can. And every time it happens, people are always like, well, that's the end of that. And it's like, no, it's going to happen again.
It's going to happen again. I mean, and again, and again, until it's like 100 years old or 80 years old. Like with Golden Age comics, you don't hear about people finding Golden Age comics anymore because not only have those people died that owned them, but their grandkids are dead. So by the time it passes hands at least once or twice, you kind of know what you have. You kind of figure out what you have. You know, when was the last time a big Golden Age, a lot of comics has been found in someone's like basement or, you know, or attic? It doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, someone in their 30s is not going to just randomly take grandma's comic collection and throw it out on a table for a garage sale without looking into it these days.
But they might, I mean, if a grandma I've had it from, it's possible, but I haven't heard of it. But for these games are only 30 years old. So it's, these people, the original owners are now selling them. When they're 10 years old, getting Steam Events for some god-awful reason. When they're 40, they're getting rid of a lot on eBay. So he said that, I guess, other people were blowing it up at the time when he was trying to negotiate. And he just sort of said, yeah, I don't have to test them. Just give me the games and I'll go. Which, of course, is what you're going to do. You know, because I'm surprised, though, that, like, someone didn't, like, call or say, I'll offer you, like, $500 or $1,000 for this, you know, in order to get it. He got it for what the people wanted, $100.
Yeah.
Here. It's kind of like a, you know, it's like an amazing sort of story that happens here. Anything else to add here, Ian?
No, I mean, there's not a whole lot to say about it. The guy said he sold it. Immediately put it on eBay, and honestly, I probably would do the same.
Oh,
thing.
Is it on eBay already?
One of the responses says he's sending it to eBay immediately. I don't know when, if he actually did or not.
Same events, fake one, fake one, fake one, fake one, fake one, pal, fake one. Here's one that's complete for $75,000 or best offer. I don't see it on eBay yet. I see the Steam Events NES Spiel Sehr gut, complete in box, German one, German Steam Events. It's not up yet. Here. He had some more details in the Nintendo Age thread, which will be linked here. And why can't I easily navigate the thread here? What's going on here? Why are the buttons not on the bottom? He responded to it, get there. It was like 10 to 15 minutes after the person saw the ad, it sounds like. It was pretty quick. Because obviously, I want to see the original picture now. I want to see the original picture of the ad. I wish that was available. I want to see if it was, like, tucked away in the corner. And then, obviously, once you see it, you're like, holy shit, is this a joke?
No, he said he noticed it when he was in his car on the way over. He was already in the car on the way over when he noticed that there was a Stadium Events in
there. Maybe it wasn't the main picture. It was, like, a secondary, maybe. or just like, who cares? It's a sports game, so why take a picture of it, put it up front? He said it was like a Contra and a Battletoads there. Oh, Battletoads alone, you got to rush over and get that, right? That peach of a game. What is that? Is that like a $20 game now, Battletoads?
Probably.
Something like that. It's come down a little bit.
We don't see it super often. I think we sell it for
$20, $25. Here. All right, anything else going on? Here's the picture. In the thread, there's a picture of this, the main pick. Here it is. It was added. So the first main pick, this is why. The main pick was an NES, the red-orange zapper and two controllers on top. That's the first picture here. Picture two has, there was a 191 Pirate multi-cart, a Contra, a Battletoads, a Track and Field 2, a Galaga, a Top Secret Episode, woo! Super Mario Duck Hunt, Othello, Taboo. That's a weird mix of games.
How far down Winter was games. It? I don't see it.
It's second row, second. Oh, second Ice page. Hockey, Star Tropics. This is the most Bugs Bunny, Crazy Castle, Final Fantasy. The most eclectic mix of games. Like, that's a good mix of games. And for statements to be thrown in there is really odd, especially if there was no Power Pad or Family Fun Fitness Pad in the lot here.
Or that's, anything else.
That's really weird. That is weird when you see something like that. It almost is a joke. But that's why. Maybe he was able to get it. It wasn't the main picture. You figure, why not put the console with the games? That's on page three if you see that.
I don't see the picture at all on page two or page one.
It's on page four. Sorry, page four. It's like four posts down on page four there. So there you have it. That's really interesting there. Right there, the pictures. This is a lot. Isn't it hilarious that such a collectible treasure is just lying here, looking snug between Ice Hockey and Taboo? Well, because they're both better games. Even Taboo is a better game than Statement. So that's why it's sitting there. I think it's something that I would probably have to double. Like, I probably would glance over at first, gloss over something like that, and then have to look back and say, "What was that?" And then like zoom in on it to get that. Some of the games have, looks like the Super Mario Duck has a barcode on it. So I'm guessing this might have been a collector that has compiled this stuff and didn't realize the value might have gone up in 20 years. To get these mixed games. Oh, there is a Family Fun Fitness version of Athletic World there.
Oh, okay.
So this person did have...
That makes sense. Though.
Did have the Family Fun Fitness Pad. Whoever originally had these games had the fitness pad.
That's not so weird.
Back in 87 when they sold it for like 6 months, or less, depending upon your information you might get from an NES Punk video with me and Ian hitting each other in the ground for a statement's cart.
Oh, yeah. There was that.
That was funny. You're still in pain, though. I'm sorry. Sorry, I got a couple shots in you for real there. Put a couple of New Japan forearms I put to you.
No. A little sore.
All right, so there you go. I think it's a fun story that this stuff still is found here. Some people feel bad about the original seller not knowing what they have. You know, that's sort of the risk of putting this stuff up on here, you know.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, just don't tell them I can feel bad. I wonder if someone called. Do you know what you just sold? Yeah. All right. Moving on, Ian. Ian, there's a new Kickstarter for Coleco Holdings LLC, not the original Coleco people.
Ah, Coleco Holdings LLC just brings such a warm fuzzy to my heart.
Yeah, it's just an organic.
I love my holding LLCs.
You love your holding LLCs?
Yes.
They're holding the name hostage, the trademark for Coleco. Well, they did their first batch of tabletops. They had their failed relationship with the Coleco Chameleon. They had their failed Coleco Expo, and they're trying to find, how can we use this name that we shouldn't own in order to make money off of it? And so they were successful with the Rainbow Bright Coleco tabletop alongside
Robotech.
Robotech, which I think was a Game Boy Advance game.
Yes.
But the Rainbow Bright was an original game that was programmed. I think Frank Cifoli tweeted about that. There's still a guy programming stuff like this. So now there's a second batch, 17 days to go. This might hit the goal. 17 days left. 65,000 goal. When we record this, it's $16,611. Only 133 backers. I wonder if people want to get one for a second batch of these, because the first time it hit the goal, I forget what the goal was offhand. I can look it up. The first goal, but they're doing a Berserk.
They're doing one. It's Berserk and Frenzy as an all-in-one. However,
you can get different.
So basically, okay. I love VFD display stuff. Like, I'll sit around at night and read Handheld Museum and all that crap. Berserk was originally set to come out along with Omega Race, I believe it was, in 81 or 82.
Before they canceled it?
But, yeah, they never did.
Okay.
So the red Berserk one is what the original is more or less what the original arcade shell was supposed to look like. So that's your limited edition one. Way to go.
Sorry, Don.
So that's your limited edition one. Then they're obviously doing another one that is Berserk. The art is different. It has both Berserk and Frenzy logos on the marquee side of it. And, you know, then different side art. But both of them are two-in-ones.
Okay.
So,
the evolution of the Mini, Coleco evolved. This is what's interesting to me, is that, again, anyone can make these. You don't need the Coleco name to make these. You could come out, if I had the rights to do to the game, I could make one of these myself. I don't need Coleco's involvement. They're trying to push that it has to be Coleco. It absolutely doesn't. Anyone can make a tabletop, their own tabletop.
Sure.
They don't, Coleco Holdings doesn't own the property of a tabletop.
My thought, so I was discussing with a friend the other day about this. I kind of think if you were a collector of these and you had all these old ones, the Berserk one in its original shell
could be cool to complete the set.
To complete the set. And like especially if they did, it would have been more interesting to me actually if they did Berserk and Omega Race instead of, you know, two different shells for Berserk.
Gotcha. I'm a big Berserk fan. I like Berserk.
I can see why that Frenzy is just the sequel. You've never played Frenzy?
I've never played Frenzy. Let me see.
Oh. I actually played Frenzy first before Berserk.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It was at, I don't know, it was an arcade machine at some place where I went sledding when I was a kid.
Let me see Frenzy.
So, I get it from that aspect. It would look pretty cool in the lineup if you have all the original ones in nice condition. In general, though, I'm with you. I still don't understand how these sell the way they do. I mean, I realize that nostalgia is a powerful drug, but at the base of it, these are $70.
More than 70. The early bird's 79 for the Berserk. That's the early bird, according to this.
Oh.
$79. And then 89 for the special edition. What the hell's in the special edition? What?
The special edition is the one that looks like what it should have looked like in 81.
Okay,
That's the special
edition. The red one.
Yes, the red one.
So the regular one's 79. Gotcha. Okay.
So, Jesus, back to what I was saying. Oh, but in general, I don't understand these. They're expensive and they're tchotchke. To me, it loses a lot of charm when it's on an LCD screen and it's one game, or in this case, two games.
Well,
and they look nice, but
I'll tell you what. This is a hell of a lot better than the Rainbow Bright one and the Robotech games.
Sure, it's cool.
First of all, the Rainbow Bright one was like an adventure game. Who the hell wants to play an adventure game on a little thing? And then playing a GBA shooter game on that, it doesn't even go with the time period. None of them do. At least these are in the time period.
Yes, and that's, like I said earlier, that's why I kind of understand Berserk a little bit. But you threw me off.
I'm sorry, Ian. I love you. I'm sorry. I'm sorry I didn't let you finish your garbage plate story. I feel bad about that now.
What was I saying about this? God damn it. Oh, but other than that, I don't see any charm. It's an LCD screen. It's a plastic shell.
Oh, no. There's no charm.
You can make
it.
There's no charm. If these were, and I know you can't, but if these were like reproductions of the VFD ones with the vacuum fluorescent displays, at least there would be that interest in, look at what we could have done with the stuff. Look at what we did with the stuff back then.
If someone could produce some stuff,
yeah.
Sure.
Look at this. This is very interesting.
Versus faking it with the
yeah. This is an interesting, you know. This is an interesting piece of history that has been recreated for you to look at. And I mean, I always enjoyed them. I thought that it was very neat how much they could actually get done with those. Some of those are actually pretty fun.
I was shocked that the original one. First of all, the original ones, they were only $45. So they're doubling the price for some reason. I don't know why. They're $45 for the Rainbow Bright and the Robotech one. And those, to me, I hated because they had like the widescreen view. It even have like the regular arcade screen perspective. So that was backed by EAM. 736 people got those.
Mm.
My feeling was either they realized this is not something I'd want to repeat the experience of, or realize that maybe they weren't that well made. I don't know. But the fact that this is lagging so far, this Kickstarter, doesn't bode well.
This really would have been the one to start with.
Yes, I was going to say that. I think the Goodwill, I think they got whatever cheap game, they got the Robotech one, which doesn't make any sense at all. Rainbow Bright doesn't make any sense. I mean, for the time period it does, but it wasn't a game that came out back then. They weren't arcade games.
Right. You're throwing a garbage game into a fancy looking shell. If you had at least kept with the theme.
Simplicity. Arcade
I think if
games.
You had kept with the theme, the arcade games, actual arcade games, I think you could have, I think that momentum might have been better.
Or if you remade a Pac-Man even. Get the rights to remake the Pac-Man one. Or the Galaxian. You know what I mean? Like, do something like that, you would have went further.
So, the only thing I can think of in terms of these ones being more expensive is maybe the licensing. I'm not saying it's because Berserk or Frenzy are...
Or they had to get these made.
Well, they had to get them made, but also Berserk and Frenzy are Stern, which is still very much around.
Who the hell owns the Stern... Who owns the Stern properties?
Stern.
Stern's still around?
I'm Stern Pinball, Pat.
Oh, okay, yeah. I forget that.
Christ.
Why did I not think about it? They still own the arcade games? Think, okay.
As far as I understand, they still
rights away for pennies. No one cares about Berserk in this day and age, obviously.
Stern likes to charge for things. I mean, they're a business. I'm just saying it's probably cheaper than getting the rights for a Rainbow Bright thing, 25 years after it means anything.
I think they're both dirt cheap, probably, honestly. Special edition, early backers, 79, 200 unit limit. So they're really charging $90. It's double. It shouldn't be double the price. That's weird to me. They're doing the two pack, and they're still.
But it's two games in one. But that's people aren't buying it for the game quantity. They're buying it for the physical object.
No, we don't need both of those versions. And then they're selling the two original Robotech and Rainbow Bright ones for $130, which again, that's like double the price of what they were originally almost.
No, I thought they were 70 when they originally came out. I thought there was an early bird backing at like 45, but yes. I thought they were 70.
$45. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, early bird.
Early bird, 86, 45 Rainbow Bright, 200 Robotech ones did better, 45. Then they went up to 55. A chunk of them were, a chunk of them were sold at $45.
Oh no, I'm just saying. I'm pretty certain their final selling price was $69.99.
Where was it? What store?
If you ran out
them?
Of all that bullshit, I'm just.
I was going to say.
Think that was the MSRP, which doesn't mean they followed
the,
it.
But. The MSRP in my mind's video game store. Ian, there was no retail store that was. I think
that's
these.
Why I said MSRP.
Well, people can't hear the air quotes on the podcast. Yeah,
they can hear my sarcasm.
Air quotes. Anyway, okay, so I think we both agree that this would be a cool idea to get the old school one. That's fine. I'm a little bit still disturbed by the the promo video showing all the old original Coleco stuff that there was a different company that made the original tabletops.
Also, it drives me nuts that all of these have default four buttons.
Yeah, yes, yes, thank you.
That rarely need it. I mean, that's obviously, we're just using the shell.
The original Colecos all have different layouts for the most part.
Yeah.
They all have different. The Pac-Man one's different from Donkey Kong, which is different from Galaxian there. That, to me, loses some of the charm. You're right.
It does.
But it's cheaper. It's less tooling. It absolutely is. But you would think that, well, you only need one button for a Berserk to shoot.
Right.
Should have pawned it up. See, if I was doing this, Ian, sorry, I'm thinking bigger. If I was doing this, I'd have all of them lined up to redo the older properties, get the rights to do it. You probably wouldn't be able to get the Nintendo properties, but you'll be able to get the Namco ones, probably, to do them.
Well, the Nintendo ones, were those Coleco?
Coleco made them, but I'm saying you wouldn't be able to get the rights from Nintendo again.
No, I just wasn't, I forgot that they had their Game & Watch ones, but then they also had
Game
&
Watch ones,
ones,
I think, came after the Donkey Kong one there, which was a great one there. All right. Are we moving on, Ian, from this? Yeah, so go check out the Kickstarter. Maybe it's a good product, but I don't know how many more of these they can make for people who don't care anymore. Okay, what's the next topic here?
So a emulator is now... This article comes from Kotaku.
Our friend Chris Kohler.
As many do.
Chris Kohler's on a hot streak again, being talked about on the podcast every week.
Ethan Gotch and Chris Kohler. So Chris Kohler is doing the Nate Dogg.
He's Nate Dogg in it?
He's doing
Nate
Dogg.
Oh, I didn't see the other name. Okay, sorry.
I feel like he must be doing the Nate Dogg.
I wonder how his singer voice is, Chris.
I don't know. Probably not as good as Nate Dogg's. It's no offense to Chris, but Nate Dogg had a wonderful, wonderful
rest
voice.
Rest in peace, Nate Dogg.
So the developers behind RetroArch, I believe RetroArch is behind like the RetroPie and stuff like that, the kind of the popular all-in-one emulation.
It's a package of emulators.
Group heading the developers. They have started implementing something that translates Japanese text to English as you play the game. there is a new feature called the AI service button, I guess. And you press it while you're playing an emulated game. And I don't see it here, but I would have to assume you have to have the internet connected. And it basically, I'm sure people have seen this. Google, especially on like a phone, you can take a picture of something in a foreign language and tell it what language it's looking for and what it's going to translate it to.
Or sometimes it can detect it, can it?
Well, yes. Yeah. So, and then it basically puts the translated word over the foreign language word and gives you a rough idea of what you're reading.
On the image.
On the image.
So this is using something similar concept.
It's using it directly.
Okay.
The Google API.
It's using, okay. RetroArch's new AI service button, I think that's funny, service button, uses a Google API to scan whatever is being displayed on the screen and does a check to see if any of it registers as Japanese and translates it into English. You can map the command to a single button, well, that'd be cool on a controller, that you can press anytime you need to translate something. In image mode, the game pauses and the translated text pops up in a new text box, while in speech mode, a robot will actually read the words out loud to you while the game keeps running. There's a typo, Chris. There's two games in a row there, sorry.
So that's very interesting. Now, obviously, the success rate of it isn't always accurate or very high, but it's a start. And, you know, the Google service has been increasing in its, you know, its accuracy.
Well, it's machine learning.
And its reliability, yes. So,
which is key. So the more it uses itself and learns what's wrong and what's right and feedback, it will get better.
Exactly. So this is something that I see becoming popular very quickly.
Oh, this is great.
There are, you know, translation patches out there for many games, you know, especially the more popular ones. But to be able, for instance, for me, I don't remember, like, any of the Japanese I took.
Fire Pro.
Well, we don't need to anymore. It's in English.
Damn it.
But, you know, I could...
But for the old games.
I could take something from a menu screen from one of the Mahjong games I have that I don't understand and get something that is
reasonable.
It'll be enough.
You'll be able to figure it out.
Right, exactly.
It may not be, you know, if you're playing, like, maybe the story in an RPG might get butchered, but you'd probably still be able to follow along at least.
So I think this is really exciting. Not even so much for RPGs and whatnot, but I think this is really exciting for people who do not know Japanese, who are into niche and weird games that don't necessarily have a following or, you know, wouldn't be a candidate for a translation patch.
Yeah.
This is going to be really cool for that stuff. Like, I'm excited. I can start looking at, I don't know, I can really, instead of just playing through the normal modes, I can really, like, break down the... I can really break down the menus and the options in a lot of these games that I've never been able to because I just don't have the time or the knowledge.
So, obviously, the nuance of the Japanese language is different than English, so it's not going to be 100%. I was talking about, looks like something from, is this from Earthbound?
That's Earthbound from Mother 3. Okay. So, the first screen, for instance, Chris did the translation here. It says, I stepped on a mole cricket. I wonder if it's okay. The machine translation gets tripped up on the insect name. It says, basically, it says, it was Okara, but I wonder if it was all right.
So it's taking some... Okay, I see what it's doing.
Yes.
Yeah. Because the name of the insect is part of another term or word. It's breaking it up. That can happen, obviously, some of that when you're translating, if you don't know the difference.
So then they have a second one where that translates everything correctly but misses the nuance, the how you would read into a language, essentially. It says, okay, everyone, it's time to eat. The other one says, which literally translates to, everyone is rice.
Everyone is rice.
Yes.
Gotcha. So, all right. It'll get better. I think it's impressive. And it happens with very small delay looking at the video. It's like, especially when it speaks, it's like a second and a half, then it starts reading it.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. Machines are taking over, Ian. But of course, it starts with video games.
Oh, and yeah, here Chris or Ethan says, basically the machine learning translation works well for when you need to note a specific command prompt or an idea of what you're supposed to be doing. So yeah, exactly. For just like menus and commands and single one-off words on retro games, like that's, I'm stupid excited about
I need to know how to...
I don't need to take pictures anymore.
I need how to do the AI and Fire Pro 6-man scramble on Saturday. I would have needed this versus the print, the 50-page dot matrix printout that I had. Following along, it wasn't dot matrix, but you know what I mean. Like that would
I had
great.
One for G, and it was like it was 45, 50 pages.
And I took my AI seriously, so I literally had to go down. What happens 20% of the time when the guy's in the corner?
Yeah,
he's hurt.
And then it's like everything is you count down. Wrong,
yes.
And then everything is off, and you're like, why the fuck is it off?
Why is my wrestler, why is Disco not wrestling the way I want him to
why
wrestle?
Why is Disco not dancing?
Why is he not doing his leg lock that he can never get right? Well, I can't do that. Sorry, it's a deep cut with Disco there. Anyway, all right, this can only get better, and I wonder if this will have applications for indie games potentially, versus maybe you can build this in to an indie game without having to pay someone to localize it. Even if it'd be better to localize, obviously.
We're a ways off.
Is there
a
way?
Yes.
That?
I mean,
it's a first step.
I mean, at least as a way to, there's ways to probably implement this to get, like you said, implement it into an indie game just so people over here can play
it
before it gets, if it's not going to get a release.
If I can't localize it to Japan, at least they could have a go at it.
Exactly.
And do it and get what's the opposite of English if it's. Bad, and there's an opposite to
Romanji,
so try to translate English badly to Japanese. Never thought about that. All your bases are belong to us, but the Japanese version of it. All right, moving on. Ian, we have a scumbag.
Seller.
God, this comes from Twitter. This was alerted to us on Twitter. The original person talking about this was at TabMock99. So it was an Instagram video because it's Square. They posted it on Twitter advertising basically a RetroPie system from GlowTrue.com. GlowTrue. And if you go to GlowTrue.com, it's some sort of one of these like drop shipping websites where they're selling a bunch of tech garbage, and on this site they're selling this RetroPie system. What was it, $100, $150? It's almost immaterial to me what that is. The problem, Ian, is this: in their video here, when you watch the video, they are pulling content from online creators for use in their video. They're using pictures. Looks like animations that was taken. I gotta find who the animation was taken of. They took a Dungeons and Dragons a long play from World of Long Play. They took an animation, according to TabMock, from Pac-Man Don't Be Bad. They took an animation and put it in their advertisement. And then they also took, Ian, a quick shot of James Rolfe from an AVGN video where he's wearing a Star Trek outfit. So that's like a over 10-year-old AVGN episode.
You know what I love?
What do you really like?
They had the balls to put a floating watermark on this video.
With GlowTrue?
Yeah.
Well, the GlowTrue makes sense of his Instagram. But I also love the fact, Ian, that, it's not just the World Wide Web. It's the weird World Wide Web because it's www.glowtrue.com. There's four W's, Ian.
Oh, look at that. Yep.
So we're talking the highest level of craftsmanship that goes into these videos to do this, to sell your shitty RetroPie device that you can buy anywhere else that you're pushing on Instagram. I don't know a lot about Instagram. I just got into it with the advertisements. I don't know how it gets pushed. I guess it's sponsored. Yeah, sponsored Instagram posts.
Instagram doesn't stick for me.
Doesn't stick? Well, Snapchat does it for me, even though you Snapchat that booty clap.
I mean, that's a fantastic track, but I don't know how to use Snapchat either.
That's how I know I'm too old. I'm trying to find it on the website now. I'm trying to find the actual listing, and I can't find it. I think I asked someone to send me the link to this here. But just the cojones to not only infringe copyright when it comes to the games, but now the content creators reviewing or talking about the games and using them. I'm pissed that James's face is on this. That's slimy as fuck.
It is. It's slimy, but they know that a lot of people aren't likely to go after them.
Or care.
Yeah, exactly. Anyone who's selling ROMs is not exactly... Oh, that's a good stretch. Anyone who's...
Okay.
Wow, that was great. Anyone who's selling ROMs is not likely to be a very...
I found the ad.
Excellent person.
So it's the RetroSys 2019_2.
The retro cyst?
Cyst. S-Y-S. Not a cyst. This is a
okay. I literally thought you said cyst. And I was about to be like, are we back in the Nesticulum Genesis era?
Exactly. 22,000 plus games. They got the balls. They're selling it for half off at $150 for a retro Pi with two crappy USB PS2 controllers that looks like they swapped the image because the cross pads on the right and not the left. I don't know if they're not even competent in their Photoshop skills. Look at the picture. I'll put it in right here. Oh, it's actually right there. The second link right here. The second
All
one.
Right.
Click on that. But the balls to sell this for $150, and Ian, that's 50% off. It's usually
$299.99.
Ew! Ew, what? The price or the image that they fucked up?
I mean, everything, but the controller.
It's backwards, right?
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if that's what you got.
You think they produced it? No, they didn't produce their own PlayStation controller with the buttons backwards. That'd be funny as hell.
They totally could. I wouldn't be surprised if that's what you got. Because they were probably like 50, they were probably like 5 cents on the dollar.
Less? And so they got them?
Yeah. That's awful.
Your ill was cute. You're ill. Oh, they're wired controllers? Okay, they're USB controllers.
Gross.
The whole thing's gross.
2019 version plus 5 controller pack?
Oh, if you go down, you get a USB controller pack of a Genesis 6 button. You get a PlayStation 2 with the buttons correct, so maybe they just screwed up the Photoshop. You get a cheap Super Famicom controller, an N64 controller, NES controller. For $50, $10 each for those, when those are like probably $5 controllers.
Wow, neat.
By the way. So, all right, this whole thing is just... I never thought... we talked about a RetroPie. Your face is funny. You're just like disgusted at it all around.
That controller, it's... Oh, I can't... I don't know. That's doing a weird thing to my brain. I don't like it.
I think they just swapped the Photoshop left to right.
I've seen plenty of awful controllers in my day to know that maybe they just...
They screwed up the order?
They just screwed up. Yeah, maybe they just don't care.
Hey, we're not...
It's right-handed friendly.
We're not maligning this. This is what they're advertising in the picture. So this is a horrific campaign, horrific product. This is like a drop shipping site. They're selling stuff like... A dog headphones, is that right? If you go to the first page, bestseller, they're selling dog headphones to, for them to listen. What the hell is this? Low noise pet hair clipper. Oh, low noise. Okay, the dog can sleep, but there's earmuffs in the picture. You put earmuffs on your dog while you clip them? What is this? Is this for real?
I don't know, man.
Or is just earmuffs in the picture just to get across the fact that the dog can't hear?
Now I'm just having fun looking at bad controllers.
Sand-free beach
mat. Oh, shit. Look, right away, like immediately.
What?
There's a PlayStation controller that has the buttons on one side and the D-pad on the other.
Another picture of it?
I just Google image searched bad video game controllers.
So someone did make that potentially?
Yep, someone definitely
made
that.
All right, well, a GlowTrue, GLOTrue, .com. You are the scumbag seller of the
week.
Ian, you're still you're more disgusted by that than I thought. Ian, we have a Patreon poll topic.
We do. You go to patreon.com/CUpodcast.
Good to have you back to do the show.
You you pick the item like an automat. Like an automat.
It's like DoorDash.
You pick ordering the item and you poke it and you swipe the card.
It's like being one of those newfangled airports where you don't have any waiter. You just do it.
And there it is.
And then it pops out. Ian's writing that he was supposed to get done yesterday. It was going to pop out.
I will get one done. The last one was on Patty's. So that was posted last week.
I posted one in Ian's stead on the difference between East Coast and West Coast pizza. New York, New Jersey pizza.
Very important.
I wanted the detail.
Very, very important.
Very important to know that.
Right up. And we have a question though. People ask us questions here. Questions.
Well, no, it's a Patreon poll.
It's a Patreon poll. Pastry poll.
Pastry poll.
It's a Patreon
poll. You're falling apart. And third place, Ian, what was in third place?
Third place was what would your ideal game collection consist of if price was no object? In second place.
17%.
Second place was favorite fast foods. 28%.
That's good.
And what classic arcade games do you just not enjoy playing? That's 55%.
You want to start him?
Here I am with a spicy one. I fucking hate Space Invaders. I cannot stand Space Invaders. The original Space Invaders is not fun to me to play. There have been versions of Space Invaders since that I like, but the original Space Invaders is one of the most upsettingly unfun games I have ever played in my entire life.
I'm not far off.
I think it's miserable. It's incredibly it's incredibly stressful. It's slow. It also, I'll go back to stressful. And then I'll go back to slow and not fun and also very stressful. I hate that game.
I was going to say that was lower on my list, but I don't enjoy the original Space Invaders either.
Oh, it sucks.
I don't like the single shot action.
No.
There's not enough to hit every. There's a reason why there was a coin shortage in Japan, and why it's the most important video game ever, bar none, according to North Game Historian. No,
it's important. I'm not saying it's not important, or it shouldn't be explored, or it's not. No, it doesn't have its place.
It's a cheap game.
I just hate it.
It's an important game in game history. It's a cheap game. You cannot most. I'd say 90% of the people cannot get past probably the second screen without their quarter being gone. I can probably get to the third or fourth, and then I'm done. It's not built for you to be successful. It's built to kick your ass, first of all.
There are people who are good at it. I'm sure there's a way to be good at it, but it's never going to be me.
But I'm just telling you this. I think you can learn Pac-Man a lot easier than you can learn Space Invaders, even. And learning the keys and how to get around.
I think so.
Space Invaders is just, you better have every shot hit everyone by the third screen or you're done. You're done. And then it starts speeding up, gets to the bottom. The shields suck. The shields do more that you can't get. The shields suck. I'm sorry. Don't need the shield. I'd rather not have the shields. Rather not, almost, at that point.
Just from the earliest age, I remember it being like one of the first video games where when I was done, I was like, oh, this isn't good.
It's not good.
This made me upset.
Dare I say it did not age well. Probably immediately. It did not age well. Then they had Deluxe and no one cared about. Galaga. Play Galaga. Play Galaga or even Galaxian before you play Space Invaders. Took the concept, added scrolling.
Galaxian is very simple and basic, but it's fine. It's fine. It gets rid of the BS that I hate about Space Invaders.
You know what I
said? It's stressful, not fun, and slow. Okay.
You know what's not slow, but gets my stress? Missile Command. I get too invested in Missile Command thinking that I'm actually saving my cities from being destroyed by nuclear missiles, by ICBMs.
I think Missile Command...
I like Missile Command.
I do too.
It gets stressful really quickly.
Yes. Yes, it does.
It gets stressful.
I played Missile Command probably more in the past 2 weeks than I have in the past 10 years. I played it a few times at Long Island, and then I played it in... at the Strong Museum.
I didn't get a chance to play any arcade games at Long Island. There's Rolling Thunder right there. Sorry, go on.
Oh, but yeah, it's a fun game. I mean, it's a neat game. It's a fun game. It's one that I definitely don't particularly love to play. No. I will play it when I see it because I love the cabinet. I love the cabinet. I love the tiny buttons.
And I'm pretty good at it. I'm not saying like, you suck. No, I can get decently. I'm always stressed.
Yeah.
I'm always thinking that those little cities are like millions of people getting killed.
Somehow, like, bullet hell shooters don't stress me out.
No.
I zone out on it, and it actually almost becomes kind of peaceful no matter how many times I'm dying. But there's just so much going on in Missile Command.
Okay. I don't like Frogger that much. I don't hate it. I don't like it that much.
I love Frogger.
I don't like it that much.
I can definitely disagree with you on that. I love Frogger. That was one of my favorites when I was growing up.
I'm trying to think of some esoteric ones. Sinistar is stressful. That's not obviously a grade A title. That's more of a gem one. Sinistar is not bad. It's just really difficult to get into, but it is stressful with that big ass Sinistar running after you, though. That does get stressful.
Yeah, I always want to like Sinistar, but I don't particularly
it's tough,
get into it.
But that's fair. Space Invaders is not fair. Let's see. Dragon's Lair. I don't enjoy Dragon's Lair at all. I don't think most people do.
I love Dragon's Lair. Legitimately love Dragon's Lair.
You legitimately like that? Learning how not to get killed?
It's fun. I like watching the animation.
I don't enjoy that. It's have to be just it's classics. We'll stick with the 80s here. Do you like Joust? I don't really like Joust that much. I really don't.
No. I'd rather play Balloon Fight.
I'm not saying Joust is a bad game. I never got into it.
They're very much the same, but Balloon Fight has a theme that I like better. But I'm not hugely into either of those.
There's a reason Joust died out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
You get a bunch of Joust sequels there. I'm not a big fan of that. Now we're getting to weird ones like Pac-Man Plus and those weird Pac-Man games I don't like. Just give me Miss Pac-Man or Pac-Man. Don't give me Super Pac-Man or Pac-Man Plus. Don't give me those. Don't give me no baloney. I want a Manwich, please. I mean, at that point. Yeah. Let's see. Any ones that you'd be surprised that people would be like, oh, because Dragon's Lair, a lot of people don't like Dragon's Lair. But any ones people would be shocked at?
Honestly, I mean, I look at a lot of these games, and they're either some of the ones I don't like either aren't worth mentioning, or honestly, there's a lot of games that I'm like, you know what, this is better than people give it credit for, and I wish more people knew it. I guess I don't spend a lot of time thinking about the arcade games I hate.
I used to hate Defender and Stargate. Now I got better as I got older. Now I understand them more, so I actually like them better.
Same, actually.
I went to the opposite there. I actually grew up, and I was like, oh, this is actually, I kind of get it now.
My mom was really good at Defender on the 5200. Imagine that shit. Imagine playing 5200 Defender with that goddamn joystick.
Oh, now you realize that the joystick and the whole system is garbage.
No, I know the joystick's garbage. I still like the system.
Now, what about that classic beat 'em up Double Dragon, Ian? That's one you don't enjoy playing.
Oh, that is one that I absolutely hate. I really don't like that game at all. It is just a fucking slog. It's boring and slow and not fun, and I hate it, just like Space Invaders. And cheap.
I'm not going to apologize for the garbage plate dig now, because you deserve it after that.
Fuck Double Dragon.
Double Dragon was the best. What am I talking about? You know what? Burger Time, then. Burger Time is trash.
I love Burger Time.
Burger Time is absolute trash. Always was, always will be.
You just don't know how to play it right.
Oh, you don't either. Whenever you say that, you can't get past the second stage. Whenever you tell
me
that. You
can't get past the first.
Which is why it's trash, because I'm a decent game player and I don't understand the strategery.
I can almost beat the Game Boy one.
Last time you told me you were good at it, we played at the NES Marathon. I think you couldn't get past the second stage. I'm not even trying to. That was the truth.
Yeah, but I still know how to play it. Because I don't play it every day. It's still a fun game. You have to play it differently.
I can go back and play Pac-Man after a year and be good at it. I can play Donkey Kong a year later and be good at it. I don't have to be able to train at my shitty arcade game that doesn't deserve to still exist as a classic to be good at to beat the second stage.
Burger Time's amazing.
It's not amazing.
Because you try to play it like Pac-Man doesn't mean it's
I don't
bad.
Try to play it like Pac-Man.
Sure.
I don't try to eat the wiener and try to eat the egg. And whatever the hell else is... What else is chasing me, Ian? The wiener and the egg? The pickle? Is there a pickle in there?
Pickles, eggs, hot dogs.
Screw Burger Time. That's the one.
And I think... No, French fries are a
problem. You know what one, real quick? You know what one that I always think I'm going to enjoy more and I don't? Zaxxon. Zaxxon... I can never wrap my mind around being able to look left and right and look at the height scale. I always think I'm good at it, and then I get destroyed.
You know, it's one for me. And
but I actually enjoy Zaxxon, though. I just get turned off a little bit.
And it's not because I don't think there's a good game in there. It's because being a lefty completely fucks it up. I can't play Tron.
Oh.
I've given up on playing Tron. I just can't fucking do it because the dial's here. And the joystick is here.
You can do the light cycle if you don't need
to. I can do light cycles, and I love the light cycles. I love games that are like that, but it's way too hard for me to cross arms and then twist
The dial's on the left?
Dial's on the left.
So right-handed, but usually use your left to play.
Yeah, so it's all fucked up.
So that's interesting, because if it was left or right, it'd be the same for me. For you, it's more problem being that.
Yes.
I love that game. I love that original Tron so much.
It's a great idea. I've given up on like getting excited when I see it, because I know I'm going to last 20 seconds futzing with the controls and then say, fuck this, and walk away.
This of Tron is fun, too. It's just too quick of a game. Like, you beat the guys quickly, then you get killed easily. You go through a game like 2 minutes, just of Tron.
Sure.
There's not a huge amount going on there for that. Well, they tried to... Well, that's why they had to separate it out. They tried to include it, but we realized it's a whole new game. There. All right, I think that's good. We covered them.
Yeah, we covered them.
So my Burger Time is your Double Dragon. Fair enough. I know your weakness. Moving on. Q&A time on the CU podcast.
I'm going to ask.
Okay.
Hey, Pat, this is from Random Number Guy.
Random Number Guy.
Get Tommy Tallarico on the show to talk about Intellivision. Tongue face.
I guess he means the Intellivision Amico, which is what I spoke about last week on the podcast. They released a new trailer. You know, Ian, that it's a family console trying to bring families together and people play in the same room. That's
families, together, same room, families, yes. Together.
So, you know, Tommy we love Tommy Tallarico, finger case Tommy Tallarico.
I got along with him.
He's a fine fellow. Talked about Colored Dinosaur songs with him before. Whenever we talk about this, He obviously doesn't agree with our assessment of what's going on with the console. So sometimes I think I screwed up the price. I think it was between like $200 and $250. It's actually supposed to be like $180 at most or something, before taxes and shipping. By the way, so this is gonna be a $200 console probably, if it comes out. So Besides that, though, he usually disagrees on his assessments, and I think he posted a reply I saw on Twitter. It disappeared. I didn't block it or get rid of it. It might have been hit by spam because there was a link. I don't care enough. I really don't care enough. I don't care enough. But we don't like talking to people to give them a platform if we think it's going to be basically an infomercial. Correct?
Yes. Which is, I believe, what... And this is no disrespect to Tommy, but when you are doing this sort of product... And especially if there's always a counterpoint to what we're saying, it comes off as though it would be an infomercial to sell a product on the podcast. My question with this always is, though, is at least personally, my assessment of the Amico has never been particularly negative. I don't think it will necessarily do very well. Because it's one of those things where, like, people within the industry are, there's a handful of people who are excited about it. Mostly like 40 and 50 year old gamers who are looking back, you know, and they're like, sure, this could be cool. I like the Intellivision name. I don't think there's anything wrong with making a console that appeals to family. I don't think there's anything wrong about making a console that wants to be multiplayer focused. I don't think there's anything wrong about it being having its exclusives or having the games cheap or anything like that. I just don't see the market for it. That's not an attack on the item. I've even said before, because I think it looks kind of cool in a neat toy sort of way, but that doesn't mean I'm just going to say, yeah, I think this is great, it's gonna do awesome, everyone look forward to it. We've covered
several
a number
like
of false consoles, and I'll say it right now, if it does fine, I'm not gonna have any problem telling Tommy, no, hey, good job, it did fine. But I'm not going to just fall in a line and be like, yes, this looks great, I have no concerns with it.
And why don't we do that? Well, first of all, we don't believe it. We're not gonna say things we don't believe. Second of all, we don't, I guess this is why people love and hate us. We don't care if people have a problem with our opinions about this, but for unfortunately or not, in these situations, Ian and I have a pretty damn good track record when it comes to our predictions of these things.
Yeah,
we just do, and that's the saying where genius is. We just sort of see where the waves are going in terms of where these products end up. And that's even before, obviously, dumpster fire trash like the Retro Sigma, for example. I'm not even talking about that. But the problem is, and this is the reason why we're not sending a lot of stuff early, a lot of products early, a lot of these Kickstarter stuff, is because we're not going to sugarcoat it. We're just not. And we also don't do these interviews because I don't care about having the cachet of talking to someone like Tommy Tallarico. Tommy's a good guy. I just don't need to talk to him. And that's what some of these YouTubers get drug in. They're like, oh, I'm going to talk to someone and have them on my YouTube channel. And then they're okay with that, but they're not going to necessarily press the person on the product or even be skeptical. And that's a problem because if there's not a market for it, if the product comes out, we always said this about the Coleco Chameleon. The worst case scenario wasn't it being a scam. The worst case scenario was it coming out, people buying it, and then within like 3, 4, 5 months, the environment was gone, and now all these people are out of their money, and then they have a shitty piece of trash in front of them that they can't use or don't want to use anymore.
Right.
That's the worst case scenario. The worst case scenario is that something like the Amigo comes out, and it might have, you know, a little push at the front. But then what happens when the developers realize, I can't be exclusive, we're not selling anything
right
here. Then you have no new more exclusive games. The market, the ecosystem just disappears.
What concerns me with the Amico is it will come out, it needs to do very well at launch to keep anyone developing exclusive games
and to attract new developers
and if it doesn't, then what I see is unexclusive mobile games coming to it, and then people lose interest in it because there's nothing unique about it anymore,
and their mobile game quality,
it looks like another Ouya.
At least with the Ouya, though, there were some cross-platform games on the Ouya, correct? Was it all? There was some exclusive.
No, there were some cross-platforms. I'm not saying that it would just be. I'm saying at that point it would start to look like an Ouya if they had to pull in other stuff.
And there were developers, though, that tried to be exclusive on the Ouya that took a bath because of that, because that ecosystem just disappeared completely and it was a mess. The store, and they didn't.
I have a friend who made a game. It was a good game, and it was originally Ouya exclusive. Now, he had always had the intentions to put it up on Steam later, but I mean, he knew that was a risk, and I don't think it paid off very well.
And this is and so this so the Ouya, going back to this, and I'm sure they sold them after the fact, but this had the Ouya had over 63,000 backers, 63,000 people that got it, and that couldn't keep that afloat.
What does the Amico have?
That's there's no
Kickstarter. Oh, that's right. There's no Kickstarter.
They're gonna try to get they're trying to do it themselves and come out, which is admirable. Right, yes. I'm just
it is, and I'm glad they're not trying to string anyone along. Like I said, I this sounds bad because I really. I don't have that many issues of it. What I have an issue with is the fact that I can't make my own opinion on what I've seen. Talking about it isn't going to necessarily change me. I'm looking at the business aspect of it and what we've seen before, and this is just simply my opinion.
And the demographic, like I said, if you listen to me talk about it, the demographics is like 15 years off.
Yes.
That's the only thing, too. This is more like going to be your grandparents or older uncle's family system, not a millennial's family or Gen Xer's families.
It comes out and kicks ass. I'll play fishing derby.
Yes.
I'll play fishing derby all damn day
long. This is what I'm going to say. I would rather, if you really want to push, when you're really pushing a console with exclusives, you're really pushing the games. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
The system is immaterial. It's the games you're selling. So you're not going to do it. But my advice to Tom and everyone would be push the games. That's where you make your money anyway. You don't make the money. The console's where all the risk is. Why not push the games, come out with your remastered Intellivision games, which they tried to do before in a Kickstarter. Remember years back? We talked about it, and it failed miserably? Because one was already out on the App Store or whatever.
I think that was a different group of people.
It was a different group of people, but they did it. They did it. Why not put out on Steam, put out on your phone, try to get it put out on the Switch, an Intellivision remaster pack, and just see how it sells? Like, why limit yourself to hoping people buy the console when probably most of the profit's going to be selling the games? I just don't understand it. From a business risk, I just don't understand
well,
it.
Well, and I think that's where some of the disconnect really comes in, though. Multiplayer and family games and playing games as a family is a great idea, but you don't need a special console to do that. You need the right games to do that. This whole console thing, I think all the games ideas, I think that's great. That's right. Make all these games that are, focused on multiplayer, bite-sized, family-friendly. But the whole aspect of making it a new physical console, especially when all the games are going to be digital, that's very much just going after the old-school 40s to 50s collector's market. There's a big disconnect there. The goal in what that is, they seem different. You don't need the console to do the games.
I really don't want to be right on this one, but I have to go with my gut when it comes to this. That's the only thing. That's what I'm going to end it at. Like I said, I wish them luck. I don't want it to fail, but if it fails, there's going to be a lot of people out of money, and there's going to be a lot of people that bought this potentially that they're going to get their month or two of fun. They're going to get a handful of games that come with it. It's packed in with five of these remakes. And then at that point, what do you have left?
Well, I would say this. I feel like that a lot of the people who are behind it, being the older people, I think they know what the risk is they're taking. Okay. I don't think there's a lot of people here who are going to get hosed. And I think that's the good thing. I don't think it's not like the Atari VCS. I don't think that there's going to be a lot of people blindly throwing their money at this. I think that they're going to know what they get and what the risks are involved, but that doesn't change its success likelihood.
No. So we got 63,000 for the Ouya. What was the Atari VCS one? That VCS Kickstarter. No, it was an Indiegogo, excuse me. I'm just trying to gauge what the numbers are for stuff like this, and probably this won't do as well as the Atari VCS. It can't, because Atari has a name that people want. That did 11,600. I don't think this would do even half of that with the Intellivision name. I just don't. Intellivision name doesn't really hold any water anymore. Tommy will disagree with me, but I would trust me and Ian's perspective on this at this point, since we don't have a skin in the game here. But if it does 5,000, it'll be a moderate success for a bit, I think.
Yeah, we'll see.
Okay. All right. One more Q&A?
Nah, we're done.
You're done?
We've gone long.
We've gone long and strong. We're done. Get the friction on.
We can save those.
Okay, we'll save those. All right. Well, this is a fun CU podcast.
Yes.
And you want to finish your garbage play story?
I absolutely do not.
You didn't tell me the topics.
Don't care.
Well, did you get mac and cheese?
I'm done with the garbage plate, Pat.
No, I want to hear about the garbage plate.
No, sorry. There's a picture of it. You can discern the ingredients I got by looking.
Oh, you posted it on Twitter?
Yeah, it's on Twitter.
Oh, okay. Nice DJing yesterday, by the way. That was good.
Thank you.
So I love you most of the time.
I had a very good time on Sunday. That was one of the most fun sets I've spun.
And I needed to get out of the house.
Very bouncy. Lots of talk about ass booty.
Okay, so get the shirt. As a dog, I should have closed the window. It's the first time we had a dog bark ever during the podcast. Dog, get the shirt. Go
good
to
boy.
teespring.com/my-man-cu podcast. I wish I did that all one word. But there you go. It's my-man-cu podcast on teespring.com. Get the mom man shirt.
Get it.
Like I said.
Don't stop.
If we do 500 shirt sales, I will wear the flowy woman's tank top on a podcast. If we do 200, I'll just do the regular one and you can see my shoulders. I said my hairy shoulders there on the podcast. All right. Yeah, and that's it. We're going to be at Portland Retro Gaming Expo, Ian. October 18th through 20th. You know, the 18th is more the arcade day.
Yep.
And that's in Portland. Go to RetroGamingExpo.com. And we might have a certain Super Nintendo guidebook there if I crack the whip and get them producing books faster.
Doing that. Fingers crossed.
Oh, yes. That would be disastrous.
Not toes crossed as well.
And we'll be there hanging out, and we'll be there till Monday. We'll get Mongolian food again there. We'll see. Mm-hmm. I like the Mongolian. It wasn't bad.
It wasn't Mongolian. It was Moroccan.
Was it Moroccan?
Yes. Very, very different.
I want Mongolian then, because I want a Mongolian. It was Moroccan. It was both M's and O's. All right, for Ian Ferguson, I'm Pat Contry. We'll see you in a week.
Toodly-doo.